Blog Talk Radio.
God soldiers,
it's time to take our place as the chosen. We must bring the heat from the streets and unthaw the minds of the masses that's frozen. There's no need to carry a Mac 10 when you understand the power of the pen. This is our greatest hour. We can't be afraid to speak truth to power. It all comes down to this moment. Do you want it or do you hold it? Do you want
time is like the mind. You can't afford to waste it.
Success is on our fingertips. Can you taste it? Can you
we
taste
must
it?
Face it.
We either we arise and shine, or we complain and die.
A nation of our own,
a nation of our own.
God didn't promise space, man. He promised land.
God didn't promise space, man. He promised land.
God didn't promise
and
space,
that's
man.
My
he
word.
Land.
The high priestess of information.
Economy.
And that's my word. God didn't promise space, man. He promised land.
God didn't promise space, man. He promised land.
The high priestess of information.
Itani.
And that's my word.
Thank you for joining another episode of Conscious Conversations. I am your host, Vegeta J. I am located here in Harvey, Louisiana. Today is May the 5th, 2017, Friday. I hope everyone is having a wonderful week and that everything that you desire and that you're making happen in your life is happening, and whatever trials you are experiencing, that you know that God has ordained struggle for us. That's leading me into today's subject, which is the topic for today is suicide. Why is it becoming an epidemic in the Black community? I had scheduled a guest. I joined this Teen Life Count program here in Louisiana that's founded by the Jewish Family Foundation in conjunction with Jefferson Parish. And what they do is go into the high schools, charter schools, private Catholic schools, and teach a two-day program, approximately 3 hours, on teenage suicide prevention. And I have been accepted into the volunteer program, and I'm getting the training so that I will be able to go into the schools and really teach the program. But I think that just in listening, that the information that will be dispensed will definitely come across, I think, deeper and more compelling coming from a survivor of suicide. Not saying that the women or men who are doing it now, who are passionate about what they're doing, are not effective. I just believe that and think that, not believe, I think that the fact that I have experienced this and am surviving this particular tragedy would be more of an impact for these high school and these younger children who the ages seem to be getting younger and younger. I had a guest scheduled today and she was not able to. I guess my show was a little too raw, maybe a little too many Muslims on here. I don't really know. But at this point, I'm like Nick Cannon. I am not going to compromise who I am and what I am and what I believe and what I think for anyone. I know that I am moving on the right course and the course that Allah God has designed for me. So, you know, I understand people have political affiliations and want to, you know, shy away from different things and subjects, and that's all right. But, you know, that's not for me. So with that being said, I want to get back to that because I do have a brother coming on. His name is King Simon. And King Simon, around the 70s and 80s, could you please place your phone on mute, please? If you come to the line, please place your phone on mute if you're not speaking. The interference is really horrible. But King Simon, back in the 70s and 80s, the 80s and 90s, the brother said he had suicidal thoughts, that he wanted to commit suicide, and that he actually even thought about taking out his own family. And so he's going to join the conversation today. Allah has saved him and redeemed his mind, and he's healthy today, and he goes around teaching, and he's going to join us around 4:30. So I'm going to carry the show, and you know, my callers can call in. But before I get to that, I want to discuss briefly, just really, really briefly, Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo is the Mexican Day of Independence, and, you know, Mexico, they freed themselves from the Spanish. And I just want to say that These people are not Mexican, nor are they Spanish, nor are they Latino or Hispanic. They are indigenous people of the Western Hemisphere who traveled over here 16,000 years ago through the Bering Straits. They have inhabited this particular part of the hemisphere from all the way down to the South America, Middle and Central America, all of the United States. These are our people. We are not separate from them. Whatever labels the Caucasians have placed on us does not define us. We are all conquered people. If you speak in Spanish and you're calling yourself Spanish, well, then know that you were conquered by the Spaniards over there in Europe, that is not who you are, that you are a conquered people. So I just wanted to put that out there. And they use those things to divide us, to keep us constantly divided. But back to the subject for today. The subject for today, again, is suicide and why is it becoming an epidemic in the Black community. It has become an epidemic all over the United States, so much so that here in Louisiana, the legislature has passed a law stating that suicide prevention will be taught now in all of the schools. So, you know, that is a wonderful and beautiful thing. I know it will cause me to be really, really busy. My son took his life April the 23rd, 2002. He was 11 years old. Now, I seldom speak on this publicly, but I know now that I have to because so much is happening and so many people are checking themselves out, especially our babies, especially the children. You know, when you're going through things, when you're in the middle of a storm or you're in the middle of pain or whatever it is that you're going through, sometimes you just don't see your way out. You know, you want to resort to, it could be taking your life or you become extremely depressed. Sometimes when you become so depressed, it's very difficult to get out of bed. You lose interest in things, your friends, your hobbies, you know. Just negative thoughts pervade your mind. That's why I personally try to keep myself surrounded by positive people. I can't stand a negative complaining person in my circle. It's draining. And you know, I attribute negative thoughts and Shaitan or Satan with taking my son's life. I just want to tell a little bit of that story so that, you know, it needs to be told. You know, I am still in a healing process, but I am much better today, 15 years today, than I was the day that it happened or the second year or the third year. You know, you never are over, but at least I am to the point where I can gain some type of triumph through the tragedy. Now that I have properly grieved for my son, which in the beginning I did not properly grieve because I just was so devastated. I mean, I'm still in the why me stage, you know, and how it had affected me and my daughter. And I was really had not gotten into, you know, what the pain of my son, and I have been able to go through that process. So now I like I said, I'm in the process of learning how to properly deal with people who say that they want to commit suicide. I get several calls a year from parents or friends of mine whose children say that they want to take their lives, just making a statement, whether they're being bullied at school or something that they can't handle. You know, these issues and these things are very real. If your child comes to you and says to you, I hate my life, I don't want to live, I want to kill myself, life is not worth it, you need to take these things extremely, extremely serious. You need to be involved in your children's life and be their greatest influence. You need to give your children constant love and affection. I don't care what man you have in your life. I don't care what woman you have in your life. You need to make sure that your children know and feel that they are absolutely wanted and loved. And even if they are wanted and loved at home and they are facing pressures outside of the home, as like I said, constant bullying, some children can't take that. And if, as a parent, there are very little things that you can do outside of taking your child out of that environment, which is something that you must do. Take your child out of that environment, place them in a safe environment, whether it's homeschooling or whatever you have to do to maintain your child's mental happiness is what you must do. my son, it's a particular story because my first husband and I, we did not get along in our separating. You know, I just keep it real. You know, when I go to the stage or when I teach, I'm always the realest person on the planet. You know, at that time I was dealing with women, and I did leave my husband for a woman, and he was very scorned and very upset. You know, this is just the real talk. If you can't handle the real, then this night might be the station for you. But in doing that, you know, his pain, it spilled over into our son, and, you know, just children should be kept in children's places. They should not know what is going on when two parents are divorcing or fighting. Those are things that you must keep separate. Find some time in which y'all can spend together, put y'all differences aside so that y'all children can see y'all interact as one for them. I love how Nick Cannon and Mariah Carey, how they interact with their children regardless to where their relationship lies. It is absolutely necessary for the best mental health of our children that you do that. And, you know, I have to take my part in those things in which I, you know, contribute to my son's unhappiness, and which is what it all boils down to. You know, he was being bullied at school because his mother was gay, but they are contributing factors. I was at that time one of those parents who did allow the educational system to educate my son. I got my son from my first husband when he was five. I mean, no, we separated when we were five, and I got him. He went with his dad. I kept my daughter, which was also a mistake. And I got my son when he was 10, and he stayed with me for that year, and then that year he took his life. Now, I must say in all honesty that my son did ask me to get him help a few weeks before he actually did take his life. But being in the space or place that I was at that time, I could not really hear his cry. I was on some other crap, you know, just keeping it real. I did not immediately seek help. I'm asking him, well, Kyrie, why can't you talk to me? You know, I'm your mom. What do you have to say? What's going on? And I'm begging him to talk to me, but all the time he needed something much deeper, but I could not see that. And, you know, it is one of my major regrets to this day, along with many others. But the fact that I didn't immediately take my son to have someone to talk to, someone who could evaluate him, or someone who might be a professional who might be able to help him, you know, that was a way in which I was found slipping. And I pray that, you know, if you see your child's behavior changing, you know, if they are a child who's very, very happy and make everybody laugh, and then they suddenly are quiet and reserved, or vice versa, you should be able to recognize changing signs in your children. Sometimes they're being molested and they can't or won't tell you. Sometimes they're afraid to tell you. You should be able to recognize the differences and changes in your child. And if you can't, then you should be able to have some type of dialogue set up where you assessing them every week, every Sunday or whatever it is, y'all sit down and talk and, you know, baby, what's going on with you? You all right today? You know, you feel love, you know, mama love you. But, you know, these are certain things that you just must and you have to do. We have to sit down and take the time to read to our children. You know, it's necessary that they feel confident as children, and we know how to develop their minds. So I'm just, you know, giving a little history on what happened to me. People always ask me, well, did he leave a suicide note? And I'm like, I don't know what difference that makes to anyone. There was the young couple who just recently took their lives in Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. The brother left a suicide note, and I will not read it on the air out of respect for his parents, because this is something that I too have gone through, and I wouldn't want my child's note read all over the planet, you know. But my heart definitely goes out to their people, because that is the hardest thing to do, to be picking out caskets and choosing funeral arrangements for your baby. It's just unnatural, but it is what it is today. I am forming a grieving mother's council. There are many women in the city who have lost children and are not receiving mental health care or counseling or anything. And when you go through such a traumatic, stressful trauma, you just cannot not talk to anyone. So I know how most women feel. If you have not lost a child, then there's not really much that you can say to me. So I think that, you know, when things need to be done, this is where my pain is pushing me presently, that, you know, I must do it. So, you know, with that being said, the reason why I chose the topic, I felt like it was necessary. Like I said, I am now moving forward and going into the schools and getting the proper training that I need so I'll be able to, you know, affect change. I have started my Kyrie Hughes Foundation. I have applied for my nonprofit status, so that I'll be able to do absolutely what is necessary as it relates to the mental health of our young children. with this young couple taking their life, the brother, his name was Marquise Brown, he took his life approximately 2 days after his girlfriend, Mercedes, did. According to him, she had already been feeling this way and had been seeking help, and he said that he was trying to help her, but I think her friends blamed him or, you know, said he contributed to it. He said that he had hurt her once and he apologized and that they were there for one another, but she took her life and he felt like there was nothing to live for, so he took his also. It is very, very sad that this is the reality that our children are choosing or that people are choosing. Now, the number one age range of those who are taking their lives presently are the age of 45 to 65. It's the highest suicide rate in the United States. And men are four times likelier to take themselves out. And there are an array of reasons why people commit suicide. It could be depression, mental health, bullying, generational curses. Like I said, my great-great-grandmother, my great-grandfather's mother, she committed suicide. And when I was doing my family history and I found that out, I was like, oh, you know. So there are such things as generational curses and things that are passed down through the DNA. I was in the training for the suicide prevention at the high school, and Ms. Dale had mentioned that 10 years ago she didn't have to mention 10 to 19-year-olds. You know, she didn't have to mention teenagers. It was predominantly 19 to 24, like college age people who were best, I guess, under pressure or whatever to succeed or finish school. But in the past 10 years, the numbers have excelled as far as those from the ages of 10 to 19 who are taking themselves out. And like I said, I know this to be a fact because I have experienced this with my son, and I have known an array of people since those 16 years who have come to me for whom I've read, and this is just, it's just an epidemic. So I wanted today's show to be on this. I know it's a little melancholy, but it is necessary. It's a necessary conversation. It is an absolutely necessary conversation. You know, when you have stars like Robin Williams and Kurt Cobain, these people do it. You have sometimes copycats, or, you know, this gives those who are having suicidal thoughts more reasons to do these things. I personally believe that. But what I believe is not necessarily the truth. It's just that which I think. And they have this show that is now airing on Netflix, and I'm kind of bothered by it. You know, I sat down and I tried to watch an episode, but I just really don't see the point. I just can't. I know that I need to. It's called 13 Reasons. I guess they're giving 13 reasons why this main character should take his life. You know, the experts are saying that it's glorifying suicide. I mean, I definitely would like, you know, people to chime in on this, you know, if you can. I know, I see we have a few
Excuse
callers
me,
on the line.
Jada?
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
Jada,
how you doing? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, how are you?
I'm
just
wondering.
Wanted to say something in reference to this topic for today. As I think you have said earlier, I believe that there is definitely a correlation between mental health and suicide. And in saying that, I think that the reason why right now suicide is on the rise with Black youth or our Black people as a race is because, to me, it seems like Black families have a tendency to rely more on spirituality to heal as opposed mm-hmm. to seeking professional help.
That's a great
I think
point.
Sometimes, I mean, that's just, a lot of people might say, oh, you know, you shouldn't say that, but that's what I think. I think that sometimes Black people think that seeking professional help means, you know, it's a betrayal of their faith, you know, and that so many things go undiagnosed because Black people don't seek mental health. You know, I think that sometimes there are underlying issues, but people want to pray it away.
Right.
As opposed to really going to seek therapy. Because therapy is very necessary for some. It's very necessary. There are many issues that our community is plagued with, and people choose not to. You know, I don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that prayer isn't necessary. I believe prayer is, of course, necessary. But I just think as a people that we want to pray everything away. And everything doesn't go away with prayer. I'm
very
sorry?
Valid point. I said you're making a very valid point.
Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what I wanted to say. That's just my take on things.
I think that our people, I think there's a stigmatism that comes with getting counseling in our community. You know, you don't want to feel weak. A lot of brothers are like, I'm not going to be telling other people our business. You know, you grew
exactly.
up, you know, what happens in this house stays in this house type of mentality.
Exactly.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
those were the old ways of doing things. But, you know, most of us, the vast majority of us, 99% of us come from dysfunctional families, broken homes, single parent homes, you know,
mm-hmm.
lack of self-image, lack of knowledge of self. You know, there's just so many things that you just, it's just not, I don't understand why it's still a stigmatism.
There's such a stigma that is attached to mental illness, you know.
But not just that, just even getting counseling for marriages. It's just Black people not trying to go talk to nobody.
Especially
pay any money. They're not paying no money
mm-hmm.
to go get somebody get their problems.
Right. And we have a tendency to think that, you know, we can work it out. We don't need a professional to step in and diagnose or listen. You know, we think we got it, and we don't. And lots of times, parents it's not that they don't see it. I think they see it. I just think that they think it's going to go away sometime, and it doesn't.
Right.
And the problem is like a snowball effect. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm.
Absolutely the truth. If anyone who wants to chime in, the number to chime in is 646-668-2795. Again, if you would like to chime in on the conversation, it is 646-668-2795. Here, Raj, you always bring an interesting perspective to the conversation. Like I said, it's something because once my son passed, like right after it happened, you know, I was investigated by the police. Naturally, they had to make sure that there was no foul play. But I was given all
mm-hmm.
of these pills, all of this medicine, and, you know, they sent me to someone. And the lady, she was a Caucasian. You know, she never mentioned God. She had never lost a child. And she... you know, were giving me these pills that were, like, basically, I think I might have taken, like, 2 or 3 times, but they had me, like, zombied out sleeping. And I just refused to take them. And that it was at that time that I began self-medicating with marijuana, just to keep it real. But, you know, I tried to do it that way. It just was the help that was offered to me was insufficient. And now I want to make sure that I take that away, that variable, that women who have lost children. I would say men, but I'm definitely, you know, my goal is women. I just seem to bond with them more. But women who have lost children, to provide a space in which we can talk out our problems, cry it out, pray it out, you know, do whatever is necessary to help us heal and get past that you have to get past it, but to deal with that most difficult time in your area, in your life that never ever goes away. It is a club that, trust me, nobody wants to belong to the trial of losing a child, especially, you know, where I can't say for someone who lost their child to murder versus me losing my child to suicide, but it's still losing a child, and it's still extremely painful. When it comes to mental health, I personally recommend Dianetics. Now, a lot of people have a problem with Minister Farrakhan and Scientology. That's on y'all. But, you know, in every religion there is truth, and there are bits of truth that can be pulled and used for healing. And this Dianetics, it does that. The auditing system, it just relieves a lot of the childhood engrams and things that you went through in your life and causes you to erase some of that mental illness. And you know, Scientology has a problem with the mental health industry, which is based upon Sigmund Freud, who was a cokehead, but we won't get into that today. I'm just saying that there have to be other solutions. I wanted to read something because I think that well, I lost it. You know, God designs us to face difficulty. It says that Allah created man to face difficulty. This is what we put on this earth for, to face difficulties. And after that, you know, after facing those difficulties and overcoming and coming out on the other side and improves our character, it improves who we are. And that, you know, you must face your difficulties with courage. And with the faith that Allah, God, is with you, and that whatever He's allowing you to go through, that He's allowing you to go through that for a particular reason. You know, fire purifies. That's just it. You know, you cannot be on the planet and not be tried. You can. The Quran says that Allah tries us at least severely, at least twice a year. So if you're going through your life and you're not having any trials, then, you know, you might need to look at your relationship with God. Why aren't you being tried? You know, why He's not putting you in the fire and bringing you out, back in the fire? You know, it's difficulty, then ease, and a little difficulty, then more ease. That's the way of God. But today, it's like everybody is just cope. They just leave. They just cope. I don't want to say just checking out, just like, you know, punking out, but it's like, man, what is going on? Let me read this right quick. I want to welcome the other caller to the line. Is that Brother Madi or Sister Latrice? It's a 228 number. Welcome to the line.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sis. I want to read something right quickly. This is from the minister. And it's necessary, I believe. I think that it's highly necessary. It says, "For indeed, your hardship will be eased. It is written in the Holy Quran, which is the book of scriptures of the Muslims, that Allah created man to face difficulty. God has brought us well onto the earth to face one difficulty after another. It is the facing of these difficulties and the overcoming of these difficulties that help us to improve our character and improve ourselves. Now, the key word is to face a difficulty. To face a difficulty means to look at it, to assess it, to summon the total strength or our being to oppose it, to overcome it, to have a determined, persevering, courageous spirit to overcome the difficulty. There is no difficulty that man is faced with that man does not have the ability to overcome. If he will summon the strength of his being against that obstacle in the pathway of his progress. But how many of us turn our backs on difficulties? Whenever the difficulty comes, we pull away from it, try to find an easy road out of a difficult situation. I'm talking to all of us. How many of you, when the difficult situations arise in your life, summon the strength of your being to stand resolutely and firmly in the face of that difficulty to overcome it? Or do you turn away? Brothers and sisters, each time we turn away from the struggle to overcome difficulty, there then is a deterioration of character and there is a destruction of the will. And the will that is within us, that is within you, is God's gift that He gives to man, and anything that deteriorates your will destroys your ability to cope with the problems of life. Struggle is ordained. Struggle is ordained by God. It is not He is not a vicious God. He is a loving, beneficent, and merciful God. But He ordained struggle. Because without struggle, you cannot bring out of yourself that which God has deposited within you. It is something that has to be brought out, and it is a struggle overcoming difficulties that manifest our own gifts and our own sublime qualities. struggle is ordained, but the Quran teaches that after difficulty comes ease. God gives you difficulty, then he gives you ease. It is like a blacksmith, if you will, who is shaping a piece of steel. He puts it in the fire, he beats it, and he cools it. This is the way God forges men and women of character. He does not forge you into great men and women without the fire, the water, and the beating. These are the difficulties of life. We must face them. We must overcome them. All praise is due to Allah. I wanted to read that because, you know, like I said, all of us face difficulties in our life, whether it's death, loss of finances, loss of life, you know, loss of whatever it is. And could someone please put your mute phone on mute? If you're not speaking, I can hear all the background noise. But it's necessary to know how to overcome difficulties, because when the negative thoughts start to pervade, how do you break past that? And how do we teach our babies? You know, how do we get across the need for struggle, the need to overcome? Because, like I said, it seems like to me the main thing now is like, well, look, I don't want to deal with it. I'm taking myself out. Anybody want to chime in on this subject? Like, why is it being accepted now? Hi.
This your cousin, Christy, chiming in from Birmingham.
Hey, Chris, what's going on? How you doing?
I love you. I had a friend who told me one time, he was a coworker, that he felt suicidal. And I asked him, I said, if you ever feel like that, you know, again, call me and talk to me or talk to someone. And a few months later, he actually took his life. And I just felt so bad because I felt like I didn't do enough, but I tried. I kept talking to him and asking him how he was doing, and I didn't know what else to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothered me because I didn't know how to help him. I felt he was serious. I've always believe that if someone tells you they feel like committing suicide, take it seriously, because
mm-hmm.
they mean it. They're not just saying that for no reason. I myself have went through difficulties when I did not feel myself and didn't never seek any kind of help, just got over it, as you say. And that is what we do. We don't go to try to get help. We just try to move through it. Sometimes it's just difficult to know what to do for a person. I mean, I didn't know how to help. All I tried to do was say, you can always call me, you can always talk to me. You know what I'm saying? But I didn't know what else to do.
And this is why I'm taking this course, so that I can help in that situation.
Assalamu alaikum. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Wa alaikum salam.
Can you hear me? Is it clear? Because, you know, my phone acts up sometimes.
No, you're clear. You're clear presently.
Okay. I don't know anything about children, for instance, in suicides. I know that here, when my kids were going to Long Beach High School 2-3 years ago, when Darius was in school, I know that several kids that were involved in a band, and I can say three that I know for sure, had taken their own lives during the summer and over some of the holiday weekends. The other two happened. I can speak from my own experience that sensation of just wanting to have something over and done with, because you have gotten to a mental tiredness, you will be most vulnerable at those times. I can't admit that I have tried to commit suicide myself. I literally took pills and I drank a whole bottle of NyQuil. And it was due to just everyday stress, marital problems, and things of that nature. And I had taken so much stuff that I sat on my bed and I laid there and I was like, okay, I'm ready. And nothing happened. So So I got back up and I went back into my bathroom and I said, well, I didn't do it right, so let me try it again. So I went back into the bathroom and I looked for other pills to take. I took some Percocets, I took some hydrocodone, I had some Alka-Seltzers, I had Theraflu, I had NyQuil, I had Tylenol. I mean, I tried to really, and it just seemed like nothing would happen. And I eventually had some issues with, like, controlling my hands and my feet and stuff, and I couldn't stop myself from moving. And eventually, I just went ahead and fell asleep. But when I woke up the next morning, I came to a conclusion after praying and asking the Most High to forgive me, because you should never get to a point to where you would harm yourself to get out of hearing somebody's voice or having to deal with people not understanding how you feel or dealing with depression as a whole. Because as Black women, I don't think society understands the level of abuse that you can go through. People say that physical is more deadlier than anything. It's not. What's worse than anything, even in children, that I find is that mental, when you can get in somebody's psyche and play with their head, when you can get inside somebody's mental capacity and you can make them feel a certain way, or if they even see you and you have beat them down to a level where even when they see you coming, everything that you have ever said to them makes them not even want to live, that person has a demon, and they have put that demon off on you, and they're only satisfied when you're not happy. And so what I would say is you have to get some help. I ended up calling some of my Muslim sisters and talking to them. I ended up calling, I talked to Sister Jada. I talked to some more people. And I realized that it wasn't me that was causing me to feel this way. It was the person who felt all these things about their self that they put on me. You see what I'm saying? And it made me feel like I just can't take this person's mouth another day. I just can't take this person's actions another day. I just cannot be around these people with the way they act, and one particular person in general. And so when I got to the point to where I can control my psyche and I can say to myself, forget what that is, these people are talking about, that person is talking about, I'm a good person. Everybody loves me. I don't have any problems. Nobody dislikes me. I'm a good person. When I'm around people,
do you love yourself? The main question is, do you love yourself? That's the main question.
Well, I did it. That's what I'm saying. Not. And the reason why I didn't love myself is because I had given all of what I had to everybody else. And when you have given so much of yourself, I mean, let's just think about what children see on a day-to-day basis in their homes, what they hear from a day-to-day basis, what they hear other adults say about their home and their mother and their father and their income and their fighting and their dislikes, their likes. And, you know, sometimes they can even hear us say, well, you know what, you wanted kids, but I didn't. You wanted to have all those babies, I didn't. I would have been fine without kids. That same thing plays a big role even in women, and I think that women are basically on a level now, especially with the brown women, that they are embedded into depression. And I think it comes from people that we're with and also the children. Those people are very, very strong, and they move emotions strongly, and that causes the kids to feel that way and even that adult.
Well, the scientists say that it takes 16 positives to knock out one negative. That is a if you just really think about it, that is a profound statement. That say you have one negative thought pervading in your mind, it will take a minimum of 16 positive thoughts just to crush that one negative. So
yeah,
you know,
and it really does.
So the question is, because I see the depression is rampant in the community, you know, not just with the babies, but the women and the men. When are we going to start thinking about professional health?
And Jada, I got one thing before I forget. Mm-hmm. I just want to say this, that to me, very unfortunate right now, in this time that we live in, that naturally, it seems natural that African Americans have internalized a lack of empathy for their own suffering.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I mean, don't get me wrong. In a certain sense, I think Black women are phenomenal. Before I begin the sentence, what I'm about to say, but I think there's this myth of the strong Black woman, because we all hurt and we all go through things, and we need help. We need gratification. We need so much. And it's like this myth. Oh, I'm a strong. Okay, yeah, I'm a strong Black woman, but I hurt too, and I need help.
Most of us are broken.
Yeah, you know, so I don't think that Black people really give their own issues enough attention.
You're right.
As a people,
right,
we don't.
I can agree with that.
I mean, we don't. You know, we carry Captain Save-A-Hood. We gotta save everybody, you know, and that weighs you down. You know, you get weighed down. You're trying to help and make sure everybody's okay. And at the end of the day, you're really not making sure yourself is okay.
Self-care is
business. And yourself, you can't help anybody if you ain't right.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, you can't help people if you're not right. You know, and we lean on each other, which it's okay. But at the end of the day, especially, it's like the Black woman, we wear so many hats. You know, that we need some love too. We need people to listen to us. We can't just be the listener. I mean, you know, we need people to listen to us too. And for whatever reason, because we have this strong Black woman thing going on, that hey, you know, I can't let anybody know that I need somebody to listen to me, because I gotta listen to everybody else. I have to take on their problem.
But so can you say like honestly, that was a beautiful statement that you made, but at the same time, can we really say that we can afford not to be strong? I mean, because the atmosphere that we're in, we have no choice but to be strong.
No, we have no choice. That, and guess what? You're so right. We have no choice but to be strong. It weighs you down.
Right.
It catches up to you.
Yeah, pipes break under pressure.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Pressure will bust the pipe, and we always feel like we have to be strong. We always have to be strong. We can't let ourselves be weak, because, like you said, we have so many things going on, so many other people depending on us that we're propping up.
And you know what? Just recently, I lost my father, who was such a force in my life. My mom passed in 2013. My dad just died in December of 2016. And I've been taking care of my parents since 2005. And it, you know, for me, in doing that, it was like, I remember when my mom died, I couldn't let my father know how emotionally wrecked I was. I was wrecked. My mom, this is my mom. I love this lady. I took care of her. She took care of me. You know, and I couldn't let him know. So I had to hold that back. You know, then when my dad died, I really couldn't show emotion with my family, my sister. I have one sibling, but I couldn't show it then because I got to be strong for her. I got to be strong for my nephew. I got to be strong for everybody. You know, it's like, well, when was I going to have the chance to really, you know, let loose and cry and all that? This is crazy the way we grow up. I don't know. Life.
And that story goes across generations and families.
Yeah, and you pass that on. And respectable woman, I'm not minimizing Black women's strength, y'all. I don't want y'all to take that like that. I'm just saying it comes a time where, you know, we need to unleash too.
And
keep it real.
You know what, Susan, that's a beautiful idea. I have seen this commercial. I don't know if y'all have seen this. There's an adult camp. They made this adult camp. And this camp in particular is strictly for adults, and they get to, you know, just unwind the whole weekend that they're there at this camp. Well, during this camp, the one thing that kind of turned me off in this camp, like this camp has, counseling, it has swimming.
It has
everything. It has counseling, swimming.
Oh,
okay. It has everything that we would need for that weekend or even that 1 week to be able to just allow ourselves to be human, so to speak, to be human. And so it brings me to this idea that Black women, brown women in general, we do wear many hats. We wear many, many hats. We carry many, many purses. We have many, many fields that we cover even without certification. And would it be better if we don't use the system? Because now, even though there's help out there for us, they use everything against us. So let's say you're LPN, but you have to take a cognitive test proving that you're mentally there every 2 years to renew your RN license. If and when that comes up and that company is sending you to psychiatric care and they need to downsize, you're the first person they're going to pick because, first of all, we're paying for you to go see a psychiatrist. Second of all, you may not be in your right frame of mind to be conducive to the atmosphere that you're in. So what I'm saying is that even though the help is there, it'd be, I'd be damned if I do, I'd be damned if I don't, depending on what your profession is, it can be used against you. So would it be better if self-help started where there were study groups where we can utilize space and what's said there stays there, what's solved there is left there, you know, where...
I think that's necessary.
You see what I'm saying?
I think group therapy is absolutely necessary, and there has to be something set up through the churches, the organizations, personal grassroots organization groups, or just individuals personally when you set up and have group therapies, because trust is a major issue. People seem to heal better when they do it in groups, and I think that Black people, once this, like, you know, the mission that I'm on, you know, to break the stigmatism of mental illness and getting counseling and, you know, making sure that it's mandatory that our babies have someone to talk to, you know, that Dianetics in the audience system is introduced. I don't care what you do, you got to learn about it. You need to know what this is because it is a healing for our people, for our minds. And, you know, there has to be different solutions. This has to be talked about. It can't be like sexual molestation and sexual abuse. It can't be swept under the rug, which we have on the show next week about sexual molestation and how, you know, families keep secrets and these things just get swept under the rug. But you can't keep sweeping things under the rug. Things, like I said, things are becoming to a head and coming to a point now where, you know, they must be discussed, and not just be discussed, but solutions have to be implemented. No more time for talking.
And Jada, I think that one thing that can be done amongst Black families, Black men, and I've heard women do it too. You guys got to stop telling your young Black men, don't cry, man up. You got to stop that. Because that's hurting them. You can't tell them that. Because crying is a relief. Crying allows you the opportunity to think about and to heal. You can't just think, oh, you ain't supposed to be crying. Oh, that's not true. If we weren't supposed to be crying, we wouldn't be allowed to shed tears.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So, you know, I hear that all the time. And, you know, stop saying that. That's not cool. Man up. Boy, you ain't supposed to cry. You ain't supposed to cry. No. Uh-uh. That's not cool. So,
Say
it again?
No, I was just saying you're right. Boys, men, they have emotions too. They have feelings too.
They have emotions. They have feelings.
Wow.
That's just my take on that. And hey,
go ahead, Chris.
I was just saying, I agree. I encourage my sons to let it out. Tell me what's going on, whatever it is. You ain't no punk if you cry because something is going on with you. I would rather you cry out than to hold it in and have them emotions and have them upsetting you and making you feel
right.
Another kind of way.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That causes more problems than anything. It makes people don't understand that when you tell our young men not, they don't have a right to shed a tear or to feel a certain type of way. We don't understand that we push them into anger, and we don't understand that there are levels to anger that some of us can't handle. You got some people that go from 0 to 10, and then you got some that it takes time for them to actually get to a limit to where they would actually lay hands on you. And I think that, again, like you all were saying, you have to come to an agreement that we are human and we have a right to feel the way we feel. And if people just can't accept that, then maybe we need to think about the circle of people that we're around, because it has definitely caused issues with us being able to come to an agreement that we do have a big problem. And in our community, it's very a large systematic issue, especially with mental issues right now.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Manhood seems to be equated by not shedding tears.
Right. Well, you know,
I don't agree with that.
You got to be tough. I don't either. I definitely don't. I wanted to get across a couple of things that, you know, can be done when you are concerned or having a conversation with someone who is thinking about committing suicide, or their child, or someone has mentioned it to you, who do mention it to someone else. One of the things you can do is show that you care. That's like step one. You know, use I statements, be specific about what you've noticed and share your concern, and invite your friend to talk to you. You know, listen without judgment, no matter how manageable the problem might seem to you. You know, just offer a listening ear. Don't show that you're upset. Just offer help. The second thing that you can do is ask direct questions. How long have you been feeling this way? Are you thinking of hurting yourself? Do you have a plan? Who is the adult that you trust to talk to about your feelings? Another thing to do is tell them to talk to an adult or an ally or friend. You know, ask them to seek professional help. But there are some things that we can do. You know, I wish that I would have been more aware when my son was having those thoughts. I wish I would have been more in tune to what he was going through. But I do know that all things happen for a reason. And if I can save one person, if I can enlighten one person, then maybe God will be pleased with me and my son will be pleased with me. We have about four and a half minutes left.
Excuse me, one other thing, Jada, I think it goes a long way with kids. I see it every day in my profession. A hug, and just a listening ear can change a child's day. You can turn it all around just letting them know that you're there and you're there. And you're listening and they're being heard. That's important. You know?
It is.
That's very important.
It really is.
Mean,
I really wish tonight.
You know, right. That's so important. Just being held that time.
One thing that I do every single morning, my baby is 16 years old. I never let him get out of the car and go to school without telling him I love him and I hope he has a good day. Every morning when I drop him off, that's the last thing he hear when he get out of the car. I love you and I hope you have a good day.
That's right.
Every day.
And when you come home, when he comes home every day, how was your day?
That's the first thing I ask him when he gets in the car. How was your day? Did you have a good day today? So I'm always letting him know. I'm always pouring it out to him every day.
That's a great thing.
It really is, and it's a necessary thing. I really wish the night before my son took his life that I would have held him that night. But, you know, again, you don't get a chance to make certain things, you don't get a do-over. And so, you know, these type of things are very important to get across to the community, you know, that we all start implementing and making our children feel loved and taking the time to talk to them, not just, you know, give them something to eat and, you know, let them play video games all day. Find out who they are and what they're about, you know.
What you went through made me some way like that, honestly. What you went through made me be that way.
Alhamdulillah.
That's one of the reasons that I do make sure. Because I never forget that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, God, you know, everybody has their trials and everybody goes through certain things and he doesn't give you more than you can handle. And, you know, for a long time, it changed me. It really changed who I became. People who know me before my son passed and know me now, I really, really mean. But, you know, Allah is God and everything is written. And I pray that my son is in paradise and that Allah is pleased with him and that, you know, he has granted him mercy. As far as me, I know what I have to do, and I'm on my post now. It took me a minute, you know, but I had to go through a little pain. This little recent pain that I went through caused me to, I could either went downward like I did years ago, or it could blow me up the opposite direction. And so that's the direction that I'm choosing, you know. So, you know, it's a matter of how we use our pain. I want to pray for my friend Mona. Her grandson has cancer, and she just placed on Facebook she needed prayers for her baby. I know what this is like because my daughter had a heart attack 2 years ago, and I thought that I would be losing my last child. Allah did spare her life. I got prayers from all around the United States, so I definitely want to send a prayer out to my friend Mona and her grandson Rashad. I pray that you, Allah, will touch him, that you can heal him, and that you will bring comfort to the family. We know, Allah, that you are God, and whatever you will, it is for the greatest good. But we ask that you put your hands on and that you heal and bring comfort to Mona and her grandson, and whatever it is, Allah, that you take it from him. In the name of your Christ and his servant, we pray, Ameen. Yeah, it's necessary that we pray for one. You know, my friend Mona has been through a lot in her life. She's lost two sons. You know, her mother, her sister, the aneurysms. And it just seems she's always, she's the strongest person that I know. And I'm praying that Allah spares her grandbaby and that his cancer will go into remission. And that Allah will be merciful to them. I do want to thank you all for joining me today. This is something that was absolutely necessary necessary for me to do. Yeah, because when I saw those two babies commit suicide and it was all over Facebook, and then they got this new movie out, I'm like, man, what is this? You know, so it's just necessary to have these type of conversations. So I do want to thank you all for joining the conversation today. This is a poem that I had written some time ago after my son passed about my struggle with my son's suicide. So I'm going to play that. And with that, please do tune in Monday as we will be discussing sexual abuse and families that hide the secrets. So please do tune in Monday, 4 to 5 p.m. Central. The number here is 646-668-2795. And with that, y'all have a wonderful weekend. Be safe. You know, chase your dreams. Be good to your babies. Love yourself. Thank you, God. Be grateful, and everything will be all right.
In this gross state of misperception, the dark voice of selfish intent whispers delights and invites my appetites to take a bite of the most luscious of forbidden fruits. Now, I'm not one to say that Adam and Eve didn't know that they were running around in their birthday suits when they chose to walk away from heaven and chase happiness in all its pursuits. But I judge them not, for I too have fallen. I have fallen, like Jonah, running many, many years from my calling, and I am wailing in the belly of this beast, darkness rising over me like yeast, and there are crows in my pockets and vultures at my flesh, and I'm praying to Allah, let this only be a test, Allah, let this only be a test. Now I am here with the eternal question, why? Why did my 11-year-old son Kyrie commit suicide? Could it be that I became the devil's concubine? Allowing him to occupy and consume my mind, neglecting what was mine, wasting precious time, where there are no more tears to cry, only more reasons to testify. And this cross that I bear, even though it seems unfair, yet I grow ever more sure that its end is of a greater affair. Could it be that he, Kyrie, sacrificed his life for me, that I might come to understand what a mother is truly supposed to be? Understand that I care not what other men's perceptions of my realities may be. Because the truth of the matter is, when I stand before His Majesty, none of you shall be there with me. I shall kneel before His throne alone, and my burdens shall be all my own. I am poised to escape hell's gates and release myself from the dungeon of self-hate, and face the serpent of subtle deceit buried deep within me. And just as my father said, I shall slay his slinky head with truth and divinity. I declare now, you are a liar, and this is not my destiny. I shall proclaim all the days of my life, Allah, you are so good to me, and this legacy that your Christ Elijah has given to me has at once and at last made me free.